You're listening to the Things I Think About podcast. I'm your host, Jim Stroud. Hello, sir. Thank you for being on the Things I Think About podcast. Please tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm Duke Multani. I'm a physician involved in research and development of new drugs, especially focused towards the brain. We're working on drugs that'll help in curing, not just helping, but actually curing diseases of the brain, especially Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, as well as several brain tumors. So that is our big focus.
Yes. That is, and I appreciate you being on the show. I know that, at least my thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's no treatment that cures diseases for patients suffering from central nervous system diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, which I was very interested in talking to you. Can you explain why the current drugs, the current treatments are not effective in curing the diseases?
Well, to cure or even help some disease, it is logical that you have to get the right drug to the target tissue. If you cannot get it there, you obviously cannot treat the problem.
Sure.
The brain is very special. It has a physiological mechanism called the blood-brain barrier, and that does not let antibody-based drugs cross that blood-brain barrier, so those drugs cannot get into the brain. If they can get into the brain, they cannot do the job. The pathways are very specific, and there are only two lanes that are available right now for drugs to go into the brain. And even on those lanes, only 0.1% of medications of those types can cross into the brain. That is not adequate to do the therapeutic job that they're required to do. What this company, the inventor, Dr. Ram Bhat, what he has done, he has used antibodies which are specific to camels. They don't exist in other animal groups. And those antibodies, he was able to extract those and then re-engineer them to get them to a size that will cross the blood-brain barrier at 150 times of anything we have right now. With that, now we can get the antibody-based drug into the brain in adequate concentration. And also, the way he has designed this drug is that not only it enters the brain, but it sticks around for a long period of time, like 184 hours, so that it can latch onto the target bad protein in the brain and dissolve it. So that's the big difference that is there with this technology. So the other interesting part is, you're so right, Jim, there was no treatment for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. When I finished medical school in 1978, there was only one drug to help in symptoms of Parkinson's called levodopa. And till today, it is the same one drug that is available. And that does not cure. It just alleviates the symptoms somewhat. Okay? Everybody eventually dies from these disorders. Okay? So the beauty with this technology is you can attach to the bad protein, dissolve it, and essentially cure the problem. That's a very interesting situation. It's a major leap, actually, from a situation we did not even have a diagnostic test. Now we are leapfrogging. We can diagnose, we can treat, we can actually cure it. And using some other adjunctive therapies like stem cells or other medications, we can actually rejuvenate that damaged tissue. Now, that's a big jump from having nothing to be able to get that person who's in a nursing home or in where their only pathway is essentially dying in that particular home, to get them out from that place, back into their own home, cooking their own meals, dressing themselves, and cutting down the $275 billion of expense that we have in taking care of those patients. So it's a major jump ahead, not just only benefiting the patients, but the whole, what this guy has done is he's developed a whole transformative, like almost like a platform technology to get drugs into the brain to hit specific brain disorders. So it's not just one drug, it's a whole platform that he has invented.
Interesting. So I imagine that you would be featured in a lot of medical journals, or this technology is featured in a lot of medical journals and peer-reviewed and all that kind of stuff. Has that happened?
Well, let me explain to you how things work in the research field.
Please.
When you're in a university setting, your big claim to fame is how many research articles that you publish. When you're in the pharmaceutical industry, publishing is not the focus. Patents are the focus. So as many patents that you have, that's what is valuable. We have already had publications, but the material that we publish is more on the application side. On the core technology, on the bench research part, we do not like to publish very much because our focus is patents. And that's proprietary data. Till we patent that, we do not publish around that.
I see. How many patents do you have right now? Are patents pending?
Right now, we have 8 patents, and four more are pending. And there are 21 more that are yet to be filed. Patents in the medical field, especially in this particular field, are very, very expensive. It costs about $250,000 to file each patent.
Wow.
And that is in just one territory. If I have to file the patent in Europe and the United States, I'm looking at $250,000 in one of the locations and at least half in the second location. So they're very expensive patents. A typical patent for a small item could cost about $25,000. These are way more expensive than that. And each of these patents is worth easily, if you look at a monetization value, and people always like to look at the investor potential and all this.
Sure.
The minimum value of this patent is about $400 to $500 million.
Wow.
So, Jim, these drugs are expensive. You know, the cell phone that you have in front of you, if you take that weight into antibodies being made by this lab, that'll be worth about $20 million. The cost is $500,000 per gram. That's how expensive these antibodies are, drugs are. One of the things that this particular company and the inventor has done is brought that cost down a lot so that it can be affordable. You know, $500,000 per dose is not, affordable.
Right. Right.
And how that is different, for example, is suppose if I have to do research tomorrow on Alzheimer's and I have a choice to use an antibody which is costing $500,000 per gram and which only 0.1% is going to go into the brain, I have that choice, or I have a choice of an antibody which is costing maybe $200,000 per gram but penetrates into the brain at 150 times that, the other one. Naturally, I need a lot less with the second option and at a much lesser cost. And then once the cost is less for the research, the cost is less for the final consumer at the end, the patient. The company's goal is not to experience, and now they can mentor new folks. And at that point in time, when they lose their minds, it's a big loss, not just for that person, but for the whole community by itself. So for the whole society by itself.
Sure.
So that's why the whole team has been very, very focused, because they feel not only are they going to be making the drugs that make a difference, they're also making a difference in making these drugs cost effective to produce and the consumer to afford.
So totally blue sky perspective. Someone's parent is struck down with Alzheimer's. With this treatment, that would go away within a year, a month, or a day, or how long would it take to recover, assuming the technology is perfected to the nth degree?
Jim, you are going to really like the answer that I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Right. A typical treatment for Alzheimer's, which is not only going to benefit, which is probably going to benefit maybe 1% to 2% to the patient, not in curing, but in just slowing down the disease. And typically, you would be expecting some results at the end of 2 to 3 years. And it's not going to stop anything. You're going to just, that is going to continue, which means you have to continue taking the medication till as long as you live, right?
Right.
That is the present way things are working out.
Yep.
This technology, within 12 weeks, in our research model, we do the treatments on animals first, and within 12 weeks, we can take out that target bad protein from the brain. So essentially, the period of treatment is just 12 weeks. And after that, you're done, right? And basically, what will happen is, just like a person has a colonoscopy every 10 years, you'll be coming for a repeat PET scan maybe every 2 to 5 years, and where you just want to check if any new protein has been deposited, which is not good for you. And then you go for a 12-week treatment and you take it out. So you can imagine how much saving. Number one is, of course, how much benefit to the patient. And number one, how much saving in the cost of the treatment. To give you perspective, there's only one drug that has been just approved for Alzheimer's, which is not going to cure the problem. It's just going to delay the symptoms a little over time and delay the deterioration of the disease. That treatment will cost $56,000 per year per patient. The cost of the treatment and the number of patients that need the treatment, if you add up, it is going to cost more than the entire budget of NASA, right? And that is just one drug, which is only has a minimal to practically almost to none, benefit. It's going to cost so much that Medicare has to actually increase the cost, for the insurance by 4 to 5%, just one drug, which is not useful, but that's what it's going to cost. In contrast, we have something within 3 weeks that cures the problem and cuts down the cost substantially. So that's where this technology is very different. It's not, by the way, Jim, it's not a new technology. In 1947, a paper was published which found out that the camel does not get any disease, none whatsoever. Cancer, no infection. You can take a boatload of COVID virus and inject into the camel, and within 8 hours, it's gone. Why is that?
I've never heard it before you mentioned it. So camels are immune highly resistant to all disease.
The only way the camel dies is by three ways. If it's old age, accident, or you shoot it. That's it. There's no other way it dies. So,
okay.
And the shark is the other animal like that. Why are these two animals that different in how they deal with disease? We all produce one particular type of antibody, which is called a dual chain antibody. In the entire living being field, whether it's the bee, whether it's the monkey, whether it's the horse, we all produce that similar type of structured antibodies. The camel and the shark produce another antibody, which is not dual chain, it's a single chain antibody. That antibody is so powerful, you can put it in boiling water, nothing happens to it. You put it in the freezer, it does not deteriorate. And even if you swallow it, the stomach acid cannot mess with it. Can you imagine? I mean, that's how strong that antibody is. That's the antibody the camel's body produces when it's attacked by a pathogen. In response to that, it makes that antibody. That antibody comes in, destroys that pathogen, whether it's a virus, whether it's a bacteria, or whether it's something that's going to cause cancer. It takes them out. And within 6 to 8 hours, it is gone. It's done the job, and that's it. It's gone. That's the nature's gift to the camel. And that's what makes the camel survive even 30 days without water and without food. It's a part of that, you know, same milieu of antibodies that the camel gets. So this research was 1947, that old. Other people worked on the antibodies, but they never really could re-engineer them. They were able to extract it, but they could not re-engineer that. That's the technology that this company has developed. Basically, he re-engineered the whole antibody, took out all the redundant parts, the useless parts out of it, restructured that backend, and came up with the final product, which is of the right size to cross into the blood-brain barrier at 150 times the concentration.
Hmm.
There have been antibodies produced which are smaller than this one, which go into the brain. The problem is they also come out from the brain because they're so tiny, they can go in and out. So they have no therapeutic benefit because they don't stick around long enough to do the job. So this antibody goes in, sticks onto the target protein, hangs with it till it fully dissolves it, and only then the job is done. The nice part is we attach a radioactive isotope to the drug. So you can actually see on a weekly basis what you're doing. You can actually see the drug attaching to the target protein on a PET scan. And you can see as you treat the patient on a weekly basis that the target protein is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. Basically, that once it attaches on, it dissolves the target protein, and then the cerebrospinal fluid basically takes it out of the body. So it's a very targeted, it is so targeted that imagine if there were 12 guys, Taliban guys, sitting, you know, having tea together. It is so targeted that you can send to hit only the guy with the red turban. It's that specific.
Wow.
And so it does not affect the other tissues because it is absorbed quickly and it goes to the target very quickly. There's not anything left around to cause side effects in the kidney or the pancreas or the liver or other parts, other organs in the body. So that makes it very interesting because side effects can be a major problem with drugs. This drug, which is for $56,000, has such severe side effects that most neurologists are not even going to prescribe it because of this side effect. The drugs that this company is making, since they go to the brain so quickly, they don't have time to hang around the other tissues. And since you know exactly with the diagnostic test you do before, you know exactly how much is the target protein that you're going to hit. So you can send only the exact drug, the exact micrograms of the drug to the target tissue so that there's not one microgram extra or there's not one microgram less. So there's no loss of the drug. There is a total focus of the drug from being injected all the way to the target protein, dissolve it, and do the job.
So. I'm wondering, as you say this, this is has potential to be highly disruptive in the pharmaceutical industry. And I'm wondering, would big pharma companies try to acquire your company just for the purpose of squashing any progress? Because I know how some companies will buy up smaller companies just so they can either acquire their technology or keep it out of the industry because it's so disruptive. Do you think that would happen with this invention?
Jim, you have hit a very interesting point on that. And trust me, you are so right about what you just said. And I have faced the same situation with this company as well. There were several companies out there who wanted to buy the company out, offering $400 million, $600 million to buy the company out. And they were only going to use one little part of the technology to basically, one of the aspects of this technology is, if somebody has made a drug but is not going into the brain, this particular drug molecule can be used as a transport mechanism to take that other drug into the brain. Okay. So the company, this particular company wanted to buy the company out, put everything else on ice, and just use that part because they've already spent $600 million in development of their drug. They're not really just going to toss it away.
Right.
And what they would do is, just like Apple, every couple of years, they have a new version of the phone. That's how they would milk it over decades itself. That we have been very focused on not having that happen. I've had several times, not just conversation, but heated discussions where they're wondering, why do you guys want to even work anymore? We are going to give you $600 million. Sit on the beach and chill out. And that's what the entire team has told them. No, we are not here to make money. That's going to happen anyway. We are here to make sure this technology gets to the patients as quickly as possible in the most safe and affordable way. And that's one of the reasons the company, when they were seeking investors, they did not want an investor, putting in $150 million and now having a couple of board seats and trying to negotiate a sale of the company. They did not need very much to begin with. The burn rate was only $100,000 a month. So the company CEO initially funded the first $6 to $7 million expense in the company out of
this is ICB International.
ICB, yes. They funded it. He funded by his own money till he was sure that he got it. It was efficacious. It had minimal to none side effects. Till he finished that, he did not go ahead. And initially, Michael J. Fox, the movie actor, mm-hmm. he has been a major supporter for the Parkinson's part of the study. And there are several other people in the high-profile people who have been very interested in funding the company. And so we worked in that particular way. Only now that the research is complete, now we're ready to manufacture the drug and start the clinical trials or sell licenses for different applications. Now we are in a position to go ahead with that. Even when we are selling a license, there's a stipulation in that for the licensee that they have to get this drug to the market in a certain period of time. Otherwise, that license will be taken back from them. So we want to make sure that they will do what the mission statement of the company is, get the drugs to the patient, not have it sitting on a shelf.
How would this be promoted and rolled out? Because I imagine it'll be big news for patients suffering with central nervous system diseases.
Jim, so far, the company has been in a stealth mode. Only last year is when they actively started to promote, and Forbes magazine, they picked them up. A couple of other major outlets also picked them up. And I have to admit, the entire team is so humble. They could take this, use social media to get this word out in a much bigger way, but they're really humble. They want to just get the drug to the market, not just focus on making a big deal about it. And secondly, it is better to, you know, under promise and over deliver,
sure,
rather than the other way around. And you can imagine this kind of stuff can get hyped very, very quickly. We do not want to build up the hopes of, you know, patients who would like to see this drug available like today. We know it's going to take us 18 months to 2 years to actually have this drug in the hands of the patients, not after the clinical trial. So that's our focus. So they've been underplaying what they have. As a physician, I get goosebumps every time I look at each step of the data that is being developed. I can see, my daughter is a physician too, and I can see, you know, these doctors in the future not having to tell the family of a patient with Alzheimer's that there's nothing much we can do, put her in the nursing home after you cannot handle her at home anymore safely. That's the conversation they will not need to have. The conversation they will need to have is, we're going to get your mother or your father tested. We're going to find out which particular bad protein is involved, because there are 15 different ones that are involved in Alzheimer's. And we're going to start the treatment. And your mother or your father is going to be fine in 12 weeks and can continue to stay home. And in addition, we would like to have other family members above the age of 40 to also get tested, so that if there's already bad protein building up in their brain, we want to fix it before it becomes a problem, before they start to have symptoms, before they start to have deterioration in their functioning. That's the way I see this, you know, happening. That's the goal of the company, to make it happen that way.
Yeah, we've had a lot of focus in our conversation about Alzheimer's and a bit on Parkinson's. Would this medical technology also be of benefit to multiple system atrophy or multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, pancreatic cancer, things like that?
The basic cruise missile technology is already developed. Okay. So now we can target to multiple sclerosis. In fact, multi-system atrophy, that particular disease, is a major focus for this company. The reason for that is multi-system atrophy is like Parkinson's on steroids. Hmm. Normal Parkinson's patients can live for a longer period of time with symptoms, but with the multi-system atrophy, they die within 18 months to 24 months. The symptoms of Parkinson's become so severe in those patients. Mm-hmm. There are only 15,000 patients per year, so it's called an orphan disease. And when you develop a drug for an orphan disease, the FDA fast tracks it, just like they did for the vaccines, and so that it can come to go to the patients much quicker. They don't wait for a phase 3 trial, which can last several extra years. They get it to the market now. So, and the same is this situation with the multiple sclerosis. In addition, we are also finding that some of these protein pathways that we have recognized, which might be active for Alzheimer's or for Parkinson's, in other parts of the brain, we see them also causing autistic disorder, other degenerative disorders. And we also notice that some of those proteins are the same ones that we are finding to be a problem in a traumatic brain injury, like boxers have, football players have, soccer players have, and above all of veterans who've been in the Iraq war, in the recent wars, they've been exposed to these close head injury. We found there's a similar type of bad protein developing in the brain. So the applications of this technology are multifaceted. There's a large number of different type of brain problems that we can focus it. Bottom line is this: instead of the two lanes to the brain, we have 150 additional lanes going into the brain. Now our goal is, which particular disease we want to hit, put $5 million to start to do the initial work on that, another $5 million to manufacture it, and about $20 to $30 million to finish the phase 1, you know, trial. And by phase 2 trial, it's going to be in the market. So what was taking us 18 months before to do that first step to find the right molecule, the right drug for that, say, for example, multiple sclerosis.
Mm.
Now things have moved so well that we can do in 5 months. Jim, for example, if you gave a tissue and this is causing a particular type of pancreatic cancer, what they will do is they will take that particular tissue, inject that into the camel. The camel makes antibodies against that. They extract those antibodies, which makes thousands of them. Find out which are the ones which are closely similar to the target tissue, and start to re-engineer those, get them at the right size to get into the pancreas, and now they have a drug for that. Once they find that they are doing the job, then they go ahead and take that molecule, inject it into E. coli bacteria, which multiply like crazy, and then they extract the drug from the E. coli, and that is the manufacturing process for making large amount of the drug. This is basically the steps that they do. So because of technology, things have changed quite a bit. When I started helping out the company in 2016, it was 18 months to get from the bad tissue to the drug. And then we would take another year and a half to actually manufacture that. Now it is 5 months to find the drug. And within 3 to 4 months, we can actually start to manufacture it. So technology has really compressed the time for us to, from concept to manufacture, that shorter period.
This is all very amazing. I'm sure people listening and thinking, wow, this is a medical marvel that's going to save a lot of lives once it totally is realized. If someone's listening right now and they wanted to reach out to you for more information on this, where could they get in contact with you or more information related to what we've been talking about?
You can easily go to the website icbii.com, and that's okay. And Jim, this is very personal for me. Mm-hmm. And I will give you my phone number. Any person who wants information or any person who has a family member who's suffering from brain disorder, whether it's Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, or any other, they can actually text that information to me or send that to my, I'll give my email address also. They can send it down. One of the work that I do is I keep compiling a list of, you know, patients who will be going into clinical trials. And that's one way we can move things much quicker and faster, because having adequate amount of patients to do the clinical trials speeds up the process and gets a drug to market much, much quicker. The recruitment is always a slow process, and this will help there. But also all the information that they will need, I'll be very happy to, you know, provide them. My phone number is 909-800-0712. And they can call on that number. And I'll also give my email address, which is for recruitment purposes. I have a set email address, and it's Shanti, as in peace, shanti911@gmail.com. shanti911@gmail.com. And so they can send a request on that email. I can send them more information specific to the concerns that they have or specific to a diagnosis that they're wanting more information about. And we'll also give them an update at what level we are in the development for a drug for that particular diagnosis. I'll be very happy to take the time to share both on the email or on a phone call so that we can get those people in line to get the help that their family member or themselves need.
Well, Dr. Miltani, thank you so much for your time. It's been very informative, very interesting. And I think it would be a benefit to a lot of people giving them a better quality of life thanks to the things you're working on. So thank you on behalf of them, and thank you for your time for being on the Things I Think About podcast.
Thank you so much, Jim. It has been a pleasure getting in touch with you and being a part of this podcast.
You have been listening to the Things I Think About podcast. If you love what you heard, hate what you heard, or don't know what you just heard, I want to know about it. Drop me an email. I can be reached at Jim Stroud, that's JIMSTROUD, @jimstroud.com. So, until next time, bye-bye.